Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast. I am your host, Sherry and Sade. Oh, that's cool. The little live noise. I am your host, Sherry and Sade. And today we will be talking about Harry and Meghan, Princess Diana, as well as many other topics. Now, I have a few segments. This is the first time I've done a podcast live stream, so I'm actually really excited about it. But I have a few segments. Now, it's kind of weird because they're not visual, but I have adopted an audio format, and we're going to see how this goes, right? Like, this is actually a lot more fun, I would say, on my end, but I hope you guys enjoy it, even though it isn't visual. Just a reminder, if you are ever interested in my visual content, feel free to check out my Patreon. There is a charge. That's why I always just say, come to the podcast where everything is free. So we have some updates regarding Prince Harry and a panel that he conducted with Cinta Bali. We also have an update regarding Melissa McCarthy and comments that she made about Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. And of course, we have to talk about Princess Diana. Now, some people have asked, like, why did you decide to dedicate your first live stream to Princess Diana? And I am more than happy to answer that. First of all, I have always been a very big fan. I've always just been a very big fan, a big supporter of her, her work that she's done globally, her impact. It's just always been very awe-inspiring, and I'm a big supporter of hers. But also, what she stood for. I just always found that Princess Diana was such a warrior. She had such a strong warrior spirit, and I've always just admired it. And I've always just been really excited to talk about her anytime I got the chance. In addition to Spare, Diana, Her True Story in Her Own Words by Andrew Morton is the only other book that I have recapped. And I've been asked to recap other books, and I've been meaning to get back to that. But I started with Spare, and I ended it so far with Diana, Her True Story. And the reason for those two books being the ones that I chose to recap is because they're the only ones that, so far, that directly involved the person. Diana, although that biography was not an autobiography, and she did deny participating, she had to do that at the time because she was in the royal family still. But she actually recorded firsthand accounts and sent them over to Andrew Morton to help him write the book. So what you are reading and what you are listening to when you partake in that book are her words. And she did stand by the book later on down the line when she divorced Charles. And then, of course, Spare, Prince Harry's firsthand account of his life, the life and times of Harry. And so I trust those sources, and they also gave me a lot of insight into why the royal family operates the way that they do. I think it's very interesting. It gives me a lot of insight into some of the moves that they make. Not everything is rooted in evil. Some things are, you know, when you don't know any better, you just do what you've been told, and I get that. And having that information has always helped me to shape my opinion of them. But that only goes so far. Oh, hi, Siren Girl. Thank you so much for joining. I appreciate you being here. That only goes so far. And so I do find myself, even with all that knowledge of protocol and what it means and how it helps and blah, blah, the good it does, there's still some stuff they did just because they wanted to and because they were awful people. And I'm always happy to talk about that. And so all that and more. So let's get started. Okay, so we've got to get started with the live stream. So I want to start with Prince Harry's participation in the Cinta Bali panel. So I'm reading directly from Cinta Bali, and it says, after the Royal Salute, Cinta Bali team took home the trophy at the Royal Salute Polo Challenge on April 12th. Just under 300 guests gathering to raise money and awareness for our work enjoyed dinner at Santa Rita Polo. There, our Lesotho country director, Ntoli Molestane, a 14-year veteran with our organization, and Dr. Sophie Chendauka, Luca, our board chair, sat down with our co-founding patron, Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex, to talk about the work on the ground. In this clip, Ntole shares the challenges that she and the team face in Lesotho. Now, you can of course read more about their specific programming in both Lesotho and Botswana at their newly revamped website, Sintabali.org, or you can click the link on their Instagram. Are y'all following Sintabali on Instagram? Let me know. And if you are listening to this live podcast, feel free to comment in the comment section or call in. I can actually see your comments and I can allow you to call in and talk to you live. That is new for me because even when I was live streaming on YouTube, I didn't have call-ins. I would actually play previously recorded calls and respond to them live. So I found that to be pretty cool. All right, so let's also get into this topic. So I wanted to talk about Melissa McCarthy's comments. Hi, Stormy. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. I also wanted to talk about this topic, Melissa McCarthy's comments about Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. Now, I'm going to be honest. I know that they have worked together. Y'all remember Meghan's 40th birthday. So I knew that they were acquainted and they had a great rapport. But I'm going to be honest. When I saw people tweeting about Melissa McCarthy comments on Meghan, I just held my breath because in the past, people randomly commenting on Meghan has been something that I've had to read. So I was like, oh no, please, not another one. And then boom, she said something great. So I was actually really happy to read her comments. And so I'll read them here. Now I'm going to be reading from parade.com. Everything is going to be linked in the description box below if you want to come back and check out these sources yourself. So this article is titled, Melissa McCarthy makes a bold declaration about Meghan Markle critics. The actress has strong words for people who aren't fans of Meghan. And this is written by Devon Forward. It says, Melissa McCarthy recently defended her friend Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, sharing why she thinks people continue to criticize her. Oh, pause. Hi, Siona Sora. Thank you so much for being here. It's great to see you guys. Thank you all so much for listening to the live podcast. I was about to call it a live stream. The live podcast. The Little Mermaid actress called out the critics who talk about Meghan in the media and elsewhere, telling Page Six at the Broadway premiere of Suss, quote, it bums me out for every woman and every person that for no reason people just like to attack. The Duchess has faced intense criticism ever since she first began her relationship with her husband, Prince Harry. Hello, Pauline Pitkin. Thank you so much for being here. Quote, a smart, interesting woman that has her own life for some reason is incredibly threatening to some people, McCarthy went on, describing Meghan and considering what might be diving or what might be driving people to negatively talk about her. As for her, McCarthy doesn't see Meghan this way, telling the publication, quote, I always think how inspiring. I've never once been threatened by someone who is amazing. I just think how inspiring. It's really on the people throwing the hate, she concluded before reiterating her appreciation for Meghan and calling her wonderful. McCarthy said something very similar about Meghan and Harry a few years ago after working with them on a project in 2021. She told Access Hollywood, quote, I just found them very inspiring. They're carving out their own lives. They're carving out their own lives for their kids. She added, the way Meghan wants to celebrate her 40th is by helping and empowering other women. How do you not get behind that? The project was to promote the 40 by 40, a 40 for 40 program involving mentoring women trying to re-enter the workplace. And so I wanted to share that first before we got into anything else, because first of all, I don't understand people who, instead of sharing their own passions or instead of sharing things that they're excited about or that they're working on or impact that they're making, they choose to bash other people, not even just women, but just like, where does that impulse come from? I've never operated like that. That is completely foreign to me, to be in a space with someone who is doing something great that maybe I don't have the ability to do, or I've never tapped into that side of myself, and to think, well, if they didn't have this, then they wouldn't be able to do that, or they did it by some nefarious means. Like, I don't go into like a whiny bag. Pause 1 second. Hi, Cupcake Gotcha World One. Thank you so much for being here. Thank y'all so much for engaging. I appreciate it. I don't think on those terms. So for people who naturally just hate, where does that come from? my personal belief is just, it's a deep sense of inadequacy of some kind. And that's the only way they know how to express it. And while that's unfortunate for them, and that has to be its own hell, that it's your own purgatory to live that existence. What I don't get is, why do you make that everybody else's problem? Why is that our problem, that you can't self-regulate, that you have self-esteem issues, that you, instead of admiring someone else or even collaborating, you do realize you guys can collaborate. Instead of doing that, you choose to be a hater. I said something similar today on Twitter, because if you haven't seen, Beyonce has her new hair care line, Sacred. And I can't wait for my stuff to get here, y'all. Oh my gosh. But she has a new hair care line, Sacred. And for weeks, people were uploading their sacred rituals and how they do their hair and how it worked for them. And people were saying, oh, Beyonce doesn't upload one because she wears weaves. She doesn't have any hair. And they were saying all these mean things. So today she uploaded her hair care routine. And surprise, surprise, not only does she have beautiful flowing hair, but it is gorgeous. And she uploaded this very funny video of just simply washing, drying, and straightening her hair for her LA launch party that happened a couple weeks ago. People have been having full-on meltdowns. Full-on meltdown. Somebody actually called this woman anti-black for showing her hair. I'm sorry. Like, come on. And it reminded me, that's why I brought it up, it reminded me of Megan. For the past few days, we have been seeing several friends of hers receive their gifts of her American Riviera Orchard jam. And they get the pretty bowl and the spoon and the lovely lemons, and they get that beautiful jar of jam that, I'm going to be honest, it looks so good. I'm so ready to try that, y'all. And I'm getting irritated because I haven't got my jar yet. Why would I get it? But anyway, I'm acting like the derangers. But no, all jokes aside, I'm ready to try it. So I cannot wait for it to go on sale. I'm going to buy up a couple of jars. I'm not going to buy up too many because I don't want to be that person. But I might buy like two or three to try and send to family and friends for them to try. And all she did, like, mind you, Megan hasn't said anything. All she did was send the jar of jam to people that she loves. That's it. The only people who've been receiving these so far are people that she knows, loves, are friends with, people in her community, her personal community, mind you, that the public doesn't really have access to. And so when these people post the reception of their jam and that they're eating, Nacho was eating it. I know that's right, Nacho, same. I would be doing the same thing. People have been posting that they received their jam, and it has been sending the craziest of crazy people into hysterics online. And I thought, sure, they're playing it up for their audience. They know, quote, hating Megan gets them engagement. So they're playing it up for their audience. Okay, whatever. But then I realized those people really were mad about jam. Like, they were really mad about, like, listen when I say it. Those people got mad about jam. Now, I thought it would die down, so I just ignored them. I didn't say anything to them. But somebody who I just adore, named Tamiko Henman, she posted on Twitter pictures of people receiving the jam. And I commented to her, if y'all don't follow Tamiko, please go follow her on Twitter. She is just the best. She is a great squatty. And her page keeps me informed. So I go to her page. I quote tweet her comment about all the people receiving their jam. And I was like, all I said was, I can't wait to try this. That's it. That's like, I didn't say this is the best jam in the world. I didn't say any of that. All I said was, I can't wait to try this jam. It just looks good. I'm not gonna lie to y'all. The consistency, the brightness of it, it looks like it's gonna be a yummy jam, but I don't know. So I can't wait to try it. That spawned into 24 hours of attacks from derangers. Because I said, I can't wait to try this jam. Somebody was mad that I wouldn't go to the Walmart and get any other kind of jam. Somebody else was mad and threatened to hang me for wanting to try the jam. Then another person was mad and said I shouldn't use emojis anymore because then that means I'm stupid. the insults were a range of stuff. And as I was reading this, all I was... These are terrible comments. Why would you say that to me? All I want to do is try the jam. They didn't even wait to find out what I was going to put the jam on. Now, I can see if I said, oh, I can't wait to try this jam on a grape. They might have been like, oh, that's nasty. boo you. Like, okay, fine. Or they didn't wait to see if I was going to put it on brioche or rye. They didn't know what my plans were with this jam. I could see if I said, I'm going to stick my thumb in this jam and suck it off my thumb. I could see people saying, well, Sharon, I don't know that that's the route to go. Sure, why not? But all I said was, I can't wait to try this jam. And people were losing it. She's a scammer. She's a faker. And I said, now listen, I don't claim to know all the scams in the world. I don't claim to be the scammiest McScammerson in the whole wide world. I don't claim to know everything there is to know about scam. But I've been on this earth a while now, and not once have I ever heard of a scam involving jam. I just haven't heard. Now, if there are claims that it's made with 14 karat gold and with every jar of jam you get $1 million, then maybe I might side-eye it. I might be like, I don't know about that American Riviera orchid. I don't know. But again, who knows? So I've been getting mollywopped all over Twitter for saying I wanted to try the jam. And I thought, I'm so glad that lady protects her peace. Because first of all, not only are these people insane, they're not witty, they're not funny, and they're not smart. By no means do they even use the English language correctly. Not one of them had a proper comma or a period or an apostrophe anywhere in those little raggedy tweets. I said, not only are you mean, you're dumb. So it was quite, oh, hi, Laverne Plunkett. Thank you so much for being here. It was quite alarming. But you know, I don't even let that stuff bother me anymore. Like, when people go out of their way to say something rude to me or say something rude about Meghan or Harry, it used to get me riled up and I used to feel the need to be like, well, first of all, now I'm more like, girl, protect your peace. These people are living in their own purgatory. They're in their own purgatory. Let them stay in hell. Let them stay in their own their hamster wheel of negativity. That is on them. And they can have that. That's all theirs. I don't want any bit of that square footage. That's you, boo. You can have that. Even people who claim to be squatties and then go to my Patreon and defend Kate and William. I was surprised. I said, you paid $10 to talk to me about William and Kate and argue? Not only is hating a terrible pastime, but you're going to go broke arguing for people who don't even care if you live or die. They don't even know you exist. But listen, no argument there. They can live the life they want to live. I'm not going to argue with them about their decisions because they deserve whatever they bring into their own world. Just remember, whatever energy is like a boomerang, whatever you send out will find its way home. It might not be today, it might not be tomorrow. And most often, it's when you least expect it and when it's the most inconvenient. Now, that's just my two cents now. That's what I have learned. Operate and do right by people, treat people good, and do your best. And good energy and good things will come to you. And maybe one day you'll have your own jar of jam. I think what they're mad about is they probably know they don't have no money and they don't think they're going to be able to afford a jar of jam. So they're mad at all of us, baby. I put $20 to the side. I said, I don't know how much it's going to cost. I'm going to put a little $20 jam money over here in case anything go down. I know I got my jam money. That's okay. Y'all better panhandle and get that jam. I'll let you know. I'm going to do a review of it when I get a jar. I'm going to do a review and I'm going to let y'all know what I think of it. But it sure does look good. I don't know. You know, I eat jam on my eggs. And I have been told by several people, like, that is country. Don't do that. But it's good to me. I love a good jam with my eggs and a good croissant or a biscuit. Now, that's just me. That's how I eat my jam. So that's what I plan on doing. But anyway, what do y'all plan on eating your jam on? What y'all gonna put it on? Now that we have talked about that. I meant to say, do y'all know that there are people, they've been calling into my voicemail line to tell me not to try the jam? Like, these people have gone very far. And what's even worse is that I don't even listen to the whole thing and they be raging, like screaming into the phone, you want to try that jam, you dirty bee? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, these people are crazy. But you, and I don't want to lay that on mental illness. Some people are just mean. But I'll say this, you know, regardless of what's wrong with them, they don't have the right to treat people like that. And so when they send that energy to Meghan, when they send that energy to Harry, when they send that energy to squatties, I used to look at them with compassion because I would be like, you know, it's sad when people live that kind of life, but it's not sad. It's inconvenient and it's wrong. And so now I don't give them anything. I don't give them no compassion. I don't give them nothing. I just say, well, continue living in your hell. You deserve it. So anyway, now that we have gotten through our current events with Harry and Meghan, I wanted to talk about Princess Diana. And I've been asked a couple of times why I wanted to talk about Princess Diana. First of all, y'all know I love Diana. I even have a replica of the Spencer tiara. I just adore her. I think she's great. And I hate how her story ended, but I love how she walked this earth and what her impact was and where her mindset was. She was always determined to be a great mom, and she absolutely did that. She was an amazing mom to her sons. She was a great mom. She was a great friend. If you hear her friends talk about her, you hear her sisters and her brother talk about her. She really left a positive impact on people. And it really gave me, you know, it inspired me to want to affect people in a positive way. Now I can't do nothing about how the derangers perceive me. I'm probably the big bad guy in their story, and that's okay. But for everybody with a brain, I'm happy to try my best and leave a positive impression on you. And a lot of that comes from covering Diana, but also Harry and Meghan and Beyonce. But anyway, I want to talk about her for that reason, but then also, have y'all seen the headlines coming out about Diana in the last couple of weeks? Have y'all seen those? Well, if you haven't, I'll give you the tea. The royal family, and I'm assuming the royal family in this case is Charles and Camilla, because this is right up their dirt road. The royal family have been putting out hate articles about Diana. And they've been popping up randomly here and there. And I've seen them and I'm like, okay, you listen, I can't expect everybody to love everybody that I admire, but the woman has been dead for decades. It's coming up on 30 years. Why are you putting out hit pieces on a woman who has not been alive for a very long time? And some of them, one of the articles was Charles saying that he wished that he had not let Diana take the reins of parenting because he would have taken a firmer hand, not with the bully, but with the youngest son, with the scapegoat child, the one he neglected the most. He wished he had taken a firmer hand with Harry, and that the reason he didn't was because of Diana and her poor parenting. Now, this is coming from a source close to them, so is as good as Charles himself saying it into a microphone in front of a lot of people. Pause before we continue. Hi, Nanau. Thank you so much for being here. Nanau is an amazing squatty. Nanau was on my YouTube and on my Patreon, and it is so great to see you here. Thank you so much for listening. But I found that to be comical, because why in the hell would we believe that out of the two parents, Charles was the better parent? I mean, did he not read Spare? How did he think we would fall for that? And most people who are in the audience to read that article and know what he's talking about were alive when Diana was alive. And y'all all know, you saw how the headlines ripped Charles apart for being a terrible dad. Any father who would use his kids as meat shield at their own mother's funeral so that the crowd didn't boo is a terrible father. But aside from that, this man abandoned William when he had a skull fracture to go to the opera. This man, on his son's christening, at Harry's christening, decided that was the time to insult his red hair. Like, he knows no bounds. He is just the worst person. But aside from that, he said he wanted to take a firmer hand. And that was Diana's fault that he didn't, right? But was it not Diana who was lambasted for spanking William when he got out of hand? She took a firm hand, all right. However, Charles has videos all over the internet of William as an older kid. Now, he wasn't like 2 or 3. He looked to be like 9 or 10, punching him in the head in the middle of an interview, and Charles did nothing. It seemed to me Diana was the only one taking a firm enough hand. And had the royal family not been in her way, maybe she would have been able to redirect that sinking ship that is a bully of a son who's been bullying his younger brother. But I hate that. How are you still putting out hit pieces on your ex-wife who is no longer here? How are you in a perpetual competition with a woman who is not here? Ooh, that sounds like a self-made hell if I ever heard of one. And then there's another article. And I know y'all saw this one because this one was all over Twitter. There was another article out there basically claiming that Kate is the more esteemed Princess of Wales. You heard me right. When I saw that headline, I nearly threw my laptop. Like, I sent an email immediately. Y'all know how I do. I'm quick to email a publication. I sent an email right away. I said what I had to say, and I went on about my business. But I was very disappointed in that. First of all, why are you comparing a woman who has been deceased for over 20 years to her daughter-in-law that she never got a chance to meet? And why are you not, the woman has cancer. Why are y'all not using this time to uplift her? Is that the only way you know to do it? In my opinion, that was, to me, that was a sure sign that that was from the royals themselves. And when I say royals, in this case, I mean Camilla. Why are you still comparing? Why are you still competing with Diana? You lost that battle. You just let it go. And here's the thing. The loser got to keep Charles. But anyway, it seems as though people have forgotten what Diana had to endure. And aside from that, first of all, Diana's impact cannot be compared to anything else. Diana's impact, she was the first to do a lot of things. She really went out of her way to make sure that she connected with her public. What she's done for the AIDS and HIV movement cannot be understated. It cannot be overstated. It is, it's unfair to her for anybody to compare her and her impact to anyone else. And it upsets me when people play on her name like that. She's the only Princess of Wales that I acknowledge. I don't acknowledge Kate, and I'm sure Kate ain't losing no sleep over that. She doesn't care, and neither do I. But Diana has had a lengthy career, and she was passionate about what she did. She was passionate about how she used her platform. She helped people behind the scenes when there was no publicity to be had. She did what she wanted to do because she was heart-led. She dug her heels in and went toe-to-toe with the royal family so that she could increase her impact. When she first married into the royal family, they told her that she should really just focus on early childhood development as a platform. And she felt, well, that's not doing enough. I want to talk about the hard issues. I want to talk about the serious issues. Even when she divorced Charles, first order of business was to carve out a role for her so that she can continue to help people and use her platform to help. This woman could have literally just said, you know what? Okay, fine. I left the family. I'm going to live a fun, high life and enjoy myself. She could have just gone to an island every week or gone on the many, many vacations that we've seen the other royals do. No, she was determined to work. She was determined to impart values and morals on her sons. That's why when her friend was passing away from AIDS, she wanted both William and Harry to be there and to help him and to be present with him and to destigmatize how they saw HIV and AIDS, and to destigmatize how they saw people who were in need or in underserved areas or under-resourced experiences. And she wanted them to be firsthand in contact with those people and communicate with those people and see the humanity in those people. I feel like that is a direct result of what we're seeing Harry do right now. We don't see Harry recoil. Have y'all noticed that when he is around anybody, he is still Harry? He is not recoiling. He is not, hand me my alcohol wipes when I shake people's hands. Like, he doesn't separate himself. He is all about community and bringing people together and helping. And that's just what we are allowed to see. And as we've seen before, the majority of the work that he and Meghan do, we don't know about it for a while. They do the work that's being done behind the scenes, and we only get a fraction of that. He is a very dedicated person. And I think that's thanks in large part to Diana. So when you compare Princess Diana to, no offense to Kate in this situation, to Kate, that sets Kate up for a failure. And this is not the time for her to be having them kind of failures anyway. But that to me, I don't know. I can't say. But that feels like that came straight out of the coven of Camilla. That's just my personal opinion. But I've in the comment section, or excuse me, in the description box of this podcast, I have linked Diana's royal family bio that really goes in depth for a lot of her work, and also the 20-year progress from a lot of her patronages that have continued on since her passing and how they've been thriving just through association. I know the Halo Trust, that's the landmine organization that she worked with in South Africa. I donate to them monthly. from covering Harry's walk and from, no, they're not in South Africa. I forgot where they are, but they are in Africa. But I donate to them monthly after covering Harry walking the same path as Diana. And that's just a small thing that just because she cared enough, it expanded the reach of so many amazing organizations. And then we saw that baton literally get handed to Harry, and he is doing all that he can. Again, I say this for people to criticize, and this is for you, Business Insider, for people to criticize Prince Harry and Meghan over what they have and haven't done. I'm looking like, okay, and who are you comparing this to? Because if you're comparing them to the other royals, how is there even a comparison to be made? Like, get out of town. But then if you're comparing them to themselves, every year they're more productive, they're more places, they're pushing, they're striving, they're scaling, they're doing amazing work. And you only hear that from people who don't bother to do their due diligence. I had to leave the Business Insider a good old nasty read in their comments section the other day because of the comments they made about Harry and Meghan saying it doesn't pay to invest in any of their ventures. And I'm like, are we looking at the same stats as I, are you looking at the same stats as I am? Because by metrics, it makes sense to invest in them if you have the opportunity to do so. Sounds like they got cut out of something. They didn't get first dibs on a story or something, and they're acting out in their headlines, but absolutely not. Harry and Meghan are by no stretch of the imagination unsuccessful. Like, you can't even say that their names and unsuccessful in the same sentence. It's absolutely crazy. It's weird how people can just lie in real time and nobody challenges it. Like, I even said, is your editor off duty this week? Like, how did you have a headline like this when we literally have Sussex.com to look at their philanthropic ventures? But you can literally go to Travelist. You can go to Cintabali. You can go, like, you can go better up that. Like, you can go look up information. And they just, we can say whatever we want because nobody's going to challenge us. And that's not okay. And I was glad. I saw a lot of you squatties in that comment section eating them up. And I'm glad. But I wanted to turn this back to Princess Diana. I know Princess Diana died in the late 90s. And a lot of people don't really know a whole lot about her and Charles. A lot of people always assume, well, he just cheated on her. It was beyond the cheating, although that is more than bad enough. Charles allegedly, according to Diana, her true story in her own words by Andrew Morton, a book that Diana participated in, Charles was mean, manipulative, dismissive. He was essentially an emotional bully. And it is so well documented in her biography. And I always refer people to her biography so that they can learn more about how she was treated and what she was up against just to be the Princess of Wales. But to see all that she accomplished in spite of all of that treatment is insane. She was a very determined woman, and she always put her children first. That is why I'm a big fan of hers. A small clip for you. I love these little these little sound effects. I'm gonna wear these out. I wanted to play a clip for you of just a few of the instances that people should never forget about Charles when he's trying to play this, oh, I was a good dad, I would have been better had it not been for Diana. That's BS, because you left your son with a fractured skull in the hospital overnight so you can go to the opera. You made fun of your youngest son for having red hair and he was an infant. Like, what kind of person bullies with a baby? Like, I mean, what kind of person beefs with a baby? Like, get over yourself. But anyway, oh, pause 1 second. I just want to say hi to someone. Hi, Zyu Fixig. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry, I don't know. I can't read your handle, but thank you for being here. But I wanted to play a clip of some of the instances of how Charles treated Diana during their marriage. Because I feel like a lot of people can gloss over that. They work so hard on their PR and they work so hard on their image that a lot of times it's easier to just take it at face value. A lot of people don't want to do the digging. A lot of people don't want to go and, you know, pull the archives, etc. But it is important that we continue to have these conversations and remind ourselves of who that man really is. And while, yes, all the sympathy in the world for what he's going through right now, I get it. We should never forget who and what he was to Princess Diana.
The quest of the handsome prince was complete. He had found his fair maiden, and the world had its fairy tale. In her ivory tower Cinderella was unhappy, locked away from her friends, her family, and the outside world. As the public celebrated the prince's fortune, the shades of the prison house closed inexorably around Diana. For all her aristocratic breeding, this innocent young kindergarten teacher felt totally at sea in the deferential hierarchy of Buckingham Palace. There were many tears in those 3 months, and many more to come after that. Weight simply dropped off, her waist shrinking from 29 inches when the engagement was announced, down to 23 and a half inches on her wedding day. It was during this turbulent time that her bulimia, which would take nearly a decade to overcome, began. The note Diana left her friends at Colhern Court saying, "For God's sake, ring me up, I'm going to need you," proved painfully accurate. She went to live at Buckingham Palace, and then the tears started. This little thing got so thin. I was so worried about her. She wasn't happy. She was suddenly plunged into all this pressure, and it was a nightmare for her. She was dizzy with it, bombarded from all sides. It was a whirlwind, and she was ashen. She was grey. Diana was given less training in her new job than the average supermarket checkout operator. Camilla kept asking if Diana was going to hunt when she moved to Highgrove. Nonplussed by such an odd question, Diana replied in the negative. The relief on Camilla's face was clear. Diana later realized that Camilla saw Charles's love of hunting as a conduit to maintaining her own relationship with him. The black taffeta silk ball gown was strapless and backless, with a plunging, gravity-defying décolletage. Prince Charles was not impressed with the outfit. When she appeared in her finery at the door of his study, he commented unfavorably, saying that only people in mourning wore black. That spat did little for her confidence as she faced a battery of cameras waiting outside Goldsmiths Hall. She was unschooled in the niceties of royal behavior and felt absolutely terrified that she would embarrass her fiancé in some way. Diana, with her father leaning heavily on her arm, walked with painful slowness down the aisle. Diana had plenty of time to spot the guests, who included Camilla Parker Bowles. Her tears were not what they seemed. Diana was chatting to him when the telephone rang. It was Camilla. Diana wondered whether to sit there or leave and let them make their farewells in private. She left her fiancé alone, but told friends afterwards that the episode broke her heart. She was now alone in the ivory tower. Diana was then 3 months pregnant with Prince William and felt absolutely wretched. Her relationship with Prince Charles was rapidly unraveling. The prince seemed incapable of understanding or wishing to comprehend the turmoil in Diana's life. She was suffering dreadfully from morning sickness. She was haunted by Camilla Parker Bowles, and she was desperately trying to accommodate herself to a new position and new family. She had pleaded, cajoled, and quarreled violently as she tried to win the prince's assistance. In vain. On that January day in 1982, her first new year within the royal family, she now threatened to take her own life. He accused her of crying wolf and prepared to go riding on the Sandringham estate. She was as good as her word. Standing on top of the wooden staircase, she hurled herself to the ground, landing in a heap at the bottom. The Queen was one of the first to arrive on the scene. She was horrified, physically shaking with the shock of what she had witnessed. Her husband simply dismissed her plight and carried on with his plan to go riding. He had such a morbid fear of letting down her husband and the royal family firm that she performed her official duties when she was quite clearly unwell. On two occasions, she had to cancel engagements. On others, she looked pale and sickly, acutely aware that she was not helping her husband. In Diana's mind, this unworkable triangle engendered a decade of angst, anguish, and anger. There were no winners. As Diana pithily observed in a memorable line, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded. A friend of both of them, who watched this unhappy saga unfold over the following decade, conceded, "I'm sorry for the tragedy of it all. My heart bleeds for the whole misunderstanding, but it bleeds most for Diana." Such was their mutual antipathy at this time that friends observed that Diana found her husband's very presence upsetting and disturbing. He, in turn, viewed his wife with indifference, tinged with dislike.
When a Sunday newspaper reported how the prince had pointedly ignored her at a concert at Buckingham Palace to celebrate the Queen Mother's 90th birthday, she remarked to friends that she found their surprise rather odd. He ignores me everywhere, and has done for a long time. He just dismisses me. Painful experience told her that any suggestions would be treated with ill-disguised contempt. He makes her feel intellectually insecure and inferior, and constantly reinforces that message, noted a close friend. When Charles took his wife to see the Oscar Wilde play, A Woman of No Importance, to celebrate his 43rd birthday, the irony was not lost on her friends. However, in the summer of 1989, she was concerned about winning her husband back. Her sense of rejection by her husband and the royal system was apparent. At that time, she was under pressure from her own family and the royal family to try and make a new start. Diana even agreed that another baby might provide a solution to the problem. However, her olive branch was met with a negative indifference which then characterized their relations. At times, the waves of anger, frustration, wounded pride, and sense of rejection threatened to overwhelm her. When Prince Charles was convalescing from his broken right arm in 1990, he spent his days at Highgrove or Balmoral, where Camilla Parker Bowles was a regular visitor. Diana stayed at Kensington Palace, unwanted, unloved, and humiliated. She felt ghastly as they looked around the various stands. Finally, she put her arm on her husband's shoulder, whispered, "Darling, I think I'm about to disappear," and promptly slipped down his side. She found little sympathy. In a mood of irritated exasperation, he told her bluntly that if she was going to faint, she should have done so in private. When she returned to the penthouse suite they occupied in the Pan Pacific Hotel overlooking Vancouver Bay, Diana flopped down and sobbed her eyes out. She was exhausted, hadn't eaten, and was distressed by her husband's uncaring attitude. 7 years of pent-up anger, jealousy, and frustration came flooding out. She told her, "I'm sorry I'm in the way. I obviously am in the way, and it must be hell for both of you, but I do know what's going on. Don't treat me like an idiot." The experience resulted in a profound change in Diana's attitude. Although she still felt tremendous resentment towards her husband and Camilla and the Highgrove set, it was no longer the consuming passion in her life. Prince Charles also has the unerring ability to freeze out those who disagree with him. That ability was extended to a trio of private secretaries who contradicted him once too often, and numerous other courtiers and staff, as well as his wife. Diana's mother experienced his ruthless streak, as well as his obdurate nature at Prince Harry's christening. When he complained to her that her daughter had delivered a boy with red hair, Mrs. Shand Kidd, a woman of fierce integrity, told him firmly that he should be thankful that his second son was born healthy. From that moment, the Prince of Wales effectively excluded his mother-in-law from his life. One inevitably stole the thunder from the other, and such behavior was part of a continuing cycle. When the couple returned from a joint visit to Canada in 1991, the princess wrote a number of thank you letters to the various charities and government organizations who had arranged the trip. When they were passed to her husband to top and tail with his own sentiments, he went through each letter and crossed out every reference to "we" and inserted "I" before he was prepared to sign them. This was not an unusual occurrence. In January 1992, when the prince sent a bouquet of flowers to Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who was recovering from a heart condition, he ordered his private secretary, Richard Aylard, to make sure they were sent only from him, not jointly. It mattered little. Diana arranged a special meeting whereby she flew to the hospital in Rome to see the woman she so admired. Again, during a planning meeting for their 92, it was felt that Diana should concentrate on promoting family planning issues. When Prince Charles was asked about the idea, he complained that he wanted to spearhead that particular issue. For once, Diana told staff to ignore the spoiled boy.
Diana had had enough. She said, "Ignore the spoiled boy," and who can blame her? Like, at this point, we're supposed to be putting on the facade that we are in a happy marriage, that we are married, and that all is well on the home front. Yet you won't stop competing with me. Like, where does that? He is so counterproductive. He can't even for the life of him, consider maybe we should operate as partners. Do you see what I mean when I say she succeeded in spite of his best efforts to deter her? It is so frustrating to even go back through some of those. So I just realized I have not been seeing your comments since this is a platform that I'm still getting to know. I've just been chatting, waiting on y'all to say something, and I found the comments finally. So I'm going to respond to your comments. Hi, Siren Girl. Siren Girl says, crazy is as crazy does with these derangers. Yeah, you just got to let them be crazy on their own. I just move on. And Siren Girl goes on to say, and that's why Petty Charles is getting his own dose of karma. I'm saying whatever you put out makes its way home, and we don't know when it's going to come back or in what form. That's why you just got to do right by people. We have to do right by people. In addition to that, oh, hey, and now you are not late. Show up whenever you want to. A lot of y'all heard about the articles that I was referencing. So thank you for letting me know that you did hear that. And Siren Girl had this comment and said, as much as I loved reading her book, it pissed me off how she was treated by everyone in that family. That was so hard to get through. When I was reading Diana, her true story, it was really, really hard for me to get through some of that stuff. One of the things that I love about her is that she did not let anything get her down. Even when things happened, you know, she had her suicide attempt and things like that. And that was really hard to read as well. She still focused on how to be the best at this job, how to continue to help people, how to expand my reach, how to reach people who are in underserved areas who may not get the attention. There's just so much footage of her going above and beyond to reach people where they are. She was just not pretentious in any way. And I also find it so insane that people compare Kate to her. Again, no shade to Kate on this, but people compare Kate to her. Meanwhile, in Diana's own book, she talks about, or her biography that she participated in, how she doesn't like the velvet headband crew, meaning the posh, pretentious, aristocratic people. She never liked those types of women. She didn't get along with them. That is literally what Kate, you know, what she tries to be, is the literal headband people, like down to the actual headband. So I find that to be so funny when people compare them. I'm like, yeah, they're not cut from the same cloth. And it's why I actually think a more apt comparison, if there was one to be made based on spirit and energy and focus, would be Megan. I feel like they have a lot more in common than Diana had with Kate. Hi, Cupcake, gotcha world. One Cupcake says, karma came around late, but it came, and it came for the new Princess of Wales too. I saw Pal. Yes, exactly. Hi, Nanao. Nanao says, Charles is still the spoiled boy to this day, to this very day. Absolutely. He is still operating like a one-man show. But I want to go back to the comments he made about parenting. That, y'all can tell, that kind of bothered me. It really did. It got under my skin. Because I want to share something specific to parenting and what kind of father Charles actually was.
In June 1991, her eldest son, Prince William, had been involved in an accident at his private boarding school. Details were sketchy, but it was clear that the prince had suffered a severe blow to his head while he and a fellow pupil were playing with a golf club in the grounds of Ludgrove School in Berkshire. Diana travelled with her son in the ambulance, while Prince Charles followed behind in his Aston Martin sports car. In numerous conversations, they were told that he had suffered a depressed fracture of the skull and required an immediate operation under general anaesthetic. They made it clear that there were potentially serious risks that the prince could have suffered damage to the brain during the initial accident. Satisfied in his mind that his son was in safe hands, Prince Charles left the hospital to go to a performance of Puccini's Tosca at Covent Garden, where he was host to a party of a dozen European Union officials. Meanwhile, Prince William, holding his mother's hand, was wheeled into surgery for the 75-minute operation. Diana waited anxiously in a nearby room until Richard Hayward walked in to tell her that her son was fine. It was, she said later, one of the longest hours of her life. Diana held her son's hand and watched as nurses who came in every 20 minutes tested his blood pressure and reflexes and shone a light in his eyes. As had been explained to William's parents, a rapid rise in blood pressure, which can prove fatal, is the most feared side effect of an operation on a head injury. The following morning, Diana, tired and overwrought, was deeply concerned about newspaper reports which discussed the chances of William suffering from epilepsy. The Queen, who had been briefed by Prince Charles, was surprised and rather shocked when Diana informed her that while her grandson was on the mend, it had not been a cut-and-dried operation. As Prince Charles wandered over the Yorkshire Dales on his green mission, a phalanx of psychologists, royal watchers, and indignant mothers condemned the prince for his behaviour. "What kind of dad are you?" asked the headline in the Sun newspaper. It was another example in a continuing pattern rather than an aberration. She wasn't surprised. It merely confirmed everything she thought about him and reinforced the feeling that he found it difficult to relate to the children. She got no support at all. No cuddles, no affection, nothing. Her reaction to William's accident was horror and disbelief. By all accounts, it was a narrow escape. She can't understand her husband's behaviour, so as a result, she just blocks it out. Diana thinks, "I know where my loyalties lie, with my son." When the prince was made aware of the public's wrath, once again his reaction came as no surprise to his wife. He blamed her. Charles accused her of making an awful nonsense about the severity and affected innocence about the possibility that the future heir to the throne could have suffered brain damage. His private secretary, Commander Richard Aylard, attempted to make amends. In a handwritten memo, he implored his royal principal to be seen in public with his children more frequently, so that he could at least be seen to be behaving as a responsible father. At the conclusion of his missive, he heavily underlined in red ink and printed in bold capitals a single word: try. The ploy worked for a while. Prince Charles was seen taking Prince Harry to Wetherby School and was photographed riding and cycling with his sons on the Sandringham estate. But Richard Aylard's modest public relations success was seen as cynical hypocrisy by the Princess of Wales, who knew the daily reality of his involvement with his children. She thinks he is a bad father, a selfish father. The children have to tie in with what he's doing. He will never delay, cancel, or change anything which he's sorted out for their benefit. It's a reflection of the way he was brought up, and it is history repeating itself. That's why she gets so sad when he's photographed riding with the children at Sandringham. When I spoke to her about it, she was literally having to contain her anger because she thought the picture would represent the fact that he was a good father, whereas Harry with love. They were a point of stability and sanity in her world. She loved them unconditionally, absolutely, working with a singleness of to ensure that they did not suffer the same kind of childhood. It was Diana, their schools, their clothes, and things. She negotiated her public and their timetables. A glance of her official diary signified as much. The dates of their school plays, term times, and were all highlighted in green ink. Him first and foremost in her life. Charles would send a servant to Ludgrove School to give William plums from the Highgrove estate. Diana to cheer him from the touchline when he played left school soccer team.
Because Diana was a real mom. She was a mom for the cameras. She wasn't a mom or attention. She cared being of her children, and you saw that in the way that she treated them, but the way that she protected them at when they were going through divorce, custody and type of life that her sons would have was an issue for Diana. She really fought back for anything. She just wanted to make sure she would get a lot of time with her sons and that she could protect them from anything that she saw fit. And I love her dedication to her boys. But she wasn't just an asset to her sons. She was an asset to the whole royal family. And they saw that after she was gone, definitely saw the interest fade because she left the royal family, all that attention that she was bringing right to her, even though she was literally a private, all that attention still stayed with her. But she was also an asset to Charles. How much he fought back, she still worked hard to help him maintain his dignity.
Diana still felt a sense of responsibility towards her husband when he returned to in 1991 following a lengthy operation from his broken arm. He intended to make a bizarre statement regarding the intense relations surrounding his injury. He his staff to find a false arm with a hook on the end so that he could appear in public like a real-life Captain Hook. Diana was consulted by courtiers who were worried that he would make a fool of him. She suggested that a false arm should be obtained, but then conveniently made shortly before he was to attend a medical meeting in Street, Central London. While annoyed by the subterfuge, his staff were that his dignity had been preserved thanks to timely intervention.
How smart do you have to be or not be to want to create such hysterics? Like, first of all, people were already speculating that what was wrong with him than what they were looking at when he had that polo injury and broke his arm. The public were concerned about him and were like, okay, this or something because of how long he'd been out of the public eye. And so this man wanted to call a press conference, show everybody he was okay by using a fake, a hook at the end. And had Diana not seen, he would have embarrassed himself and his family, the whole world. And the only regret I have is that she asked him to do exactly what he wanted to do, because I would have seen that. I would love to have seen that. So let me read y'all's comments. Okay. Hi, Nanao. Nanao says, William really needs a lot of psychiatric help. It kind of seems that way. It seems like he needs help. The way that reported that he treats people, but especially the way Harry and the way that he tried to treat Meghan, it seems like it's not all the way on upstairs. He just seems like a... Now, again, I don't know that man, but from what we know, who do know him personally, it is... Hi, Siren Girl. Siren Girl. Camilla is so jealous of a woman who was so beloved by everyone in the world that till this day she can never live up to Princess Diana's legacy. And that's really it. That's really it. She's never going to know peace by getting the man the way that man. Anytime you do dirt to people for whatever reason, that comes back to you. And until you do right, it will stay there. You have to deal with that karma. Simon Girl went on to say, as much as I loved, that part, I read that one. Hi, Nanao. Are we able to send you a super chat? No, I'm getting to know the Podbean platform, so I'm going to have more information for you, but I will next time. I'm doing some tutorials this week with them, but I know that there are gifts that you can send app, and I still haven't gotten quite a question how to do that, but I appreciate you even having the information. Thank you so much. I really appreciate y'all's support. Hey, Stormy. Stormy says, isn't this what we'll now with putting W on documents, and reference to removing the we documents from Charles and Diana, removing the we, everything as a single independent person. We saw that with William. Thank you for bringing that up, Storm. We saw that with William, where he's now his own individual cipher. We saw that he had that whole document about the middle. He only spoke for himself, usually speaking on behalf of himself and his wife, or Kensington Palace, which is the Wales family. It is very similar. Like I said, a lot of what we see William and Kate do is copy-paste what we read about her true story when Charles and Diana were separated, but putting on the image that they were still married. Charles was practically living at Highgrove, and he would fly down when it was time to do something with the family. He was not present. And then when William complained that he wasn't present enough, he wrote them he faxed them what he was doing all day, like a diary. Diana was like, listen, William Harry, want to see you more present. He started faxing them every day. Like, today I went on a ride. Like, no, fool. Come be with your kids. He is so inept. He is like a version of Michael Scott. But except Michael actually had a heart. Hi, Simon Girl. Simon Girl says, and that's why his is petty, Charles. Exactly. Because why are you going through the motions of crossing out your wife's name? Because he worked against their best interest. That's how he was petty. He was working against his own best interest. Let's see. Okay. Oh, hey, Rosie. Thanks for liking the show. Laverne Pluckett says, Sharon, you can't up. Oh, no. Okay. I'm going to have to get it. This app, I'm still getting used to the apps. Bear with me as I figure out how these little tools work. Is something I'm doing, but I'll work it out. I'm for you guys. Thanks for letting me know, though, so I can work on that. Cake says, I think William is following his dad by playing parenting to compete with Harry and Jam. Harry and Jam. Just saying, we ain't gonna say Megan no more. Jam. Why? To compete with Harry and Megan. But yeah, I agree with that. I think so too. I completely agree with that. It does seem like he's just following in his dad's footsteps. You know, if you don't work to unlearn bad habits, you become everything that you claim to hate. And that's exactly what people like to sympathize and this whole like, oh, William is doing the best he can. He lost his mother too. Sure. No one's saying he didn't lose. What we're concerned about is he became the very of the person who oppressed her. And that is so bizarre. So why can we feel for him when he literally became the next generation of who oppressed her? It doesn't make sense. Siren Girl says, like father, like son. 100%. That's exactly how I feel. Anyway, I have talked y'all's ear off. I wanted to share a little good news. So Town and Country is reporting that a lot of Princess Diana's belongings in her collection are heading to auction. So anytime I find out about stuff like this, I try to share. In the event that some of you guys want to collect some of this stuff, if I had the ends to do it, I certainly would. But it says a portion of the proceeds will benefit muscular dystrophy related charities in the United Kingdom. So right on two ends. One of the large collections of Princess Diana's gowns, suits, handbags, and more is heading to auction. Julian's is honored to present this historic auction that will celebrate Princess Diana's iconic fashion style and her reign as the people's princess, the Princess of Wales, and will be the largest Diana collection to come to auction in 27 years. Martin Nolan, co-founder and executive director of Julian's Auctions, said in a release, oh my gosh, they have some beautiful gowns from her. Oh wow, I can't believe this stuff is going up for auction. Oh wow, okay, let me continue. Titled Princess Diana's Elegance and a Royal Collection, the sale will consist of some of Princess Diana's most notable garments. There's the glamorous Marie Arbade Midnight Blue strapless tulle Diamante star gown that she wore twice in 1986. Say that five times fast. I barely got through it once. Once at the Phantom of the Opera premiere and to a dinner at Claridge's for King Constantine of Greece. Oh, wow. He just passed away, didn't he? Alongside that gown is the magenta silk and lace, or he passed away a year ago. Alongside that gown is the magenta silk and lace evening dress by Victor Edelstein that she wore in London and in Germany in 1987. Edelstein was one of her favorite designers and was also responsible for the iconic look Diana wore while dancing with John Travolta at the White House. Oh my goodness. Some of Princess Diana's pieces designed by Catherine Walker will also be sold, including a pink floral dress and a yellow and navy skirt suit that she was photographed wearing during a 1989 visit to Hong Kong. The sale will take place in person and online. So if you want to partake and you're not there, you can go to juliansauctions.com on June 27th. Bidding begins on the site at 10 a.m. GMT. A portion of the proceeds will be donated to muscular dystrophy related charities in the United Kingdom. And before bidding begins, some of the highlights of the sale will be featured in a series of pop-ups in Hong Kong and at the Museum of Style Icons in Newbridge, Ireland. So again, you can go to juliansauctions.com if you want to partake in the auction and buy some of Princess Diana's amazing belongings, some of her old iconic dresses. I cannot believe these are going on sale. But anyway, that is all I have for y'all today. I hope you enjoyed our first live stream. I am still getting to know these little bells and whistles. So with each of these that we do, y'all saw me struggle through YouTube and then eventually we became pros at that. So we're going to continue working with Podbean to work on some of this stuff. But I'm so glad we got through our first live stream. I really appreciate everybody who has been here and who's been listening and partaking. I really appreciate you. And partaking because I know it's a little bit of a jump from YouTube where everybody is to over here. So I trust and believe I really, really appreciate that. So that's all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Sharing and Shade podcast. Hi, everybody.